Vengeance is his, but I'ma do it first. I'm gonna handle my business in the name of the law. Oh. Now if he made you cry, oh, I gotta know. If he's not ready to die, he best prepare for it. My judgment's divine, I'll tell you who you can call. You can call.
Hey, 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 how's it going out there? Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
And you're in fact listening to the one and only Carolyn.
The one and only.
The one. The one.
The only one.
The only.
The only existing Carolyn and Joe.
You want to do it this time? I'll give you the effect. One, you are listening to the one and only
Carolyn and Joe. Cooney is just shaking his head. By the way, everyone, Cooney and Brian Zarvis are in the audience
today. Oh, wow.
In the audience? Yeah.
They're actually guests. Special guests.
Cooney.
I totally botched that opening.
Yes.
We are doing fine, and I'm really excited to have Cooney and Brian Zarvis in studio today.
In the studio, quotation mark studio.
How's it going, guys? How you doing? This is actually a historic episode again. Another historic episode.
Never been done before.
Because what episode is it again for? What episode are we on for you, Cooney? What number is this?
5 out of 12.
Holy crap! Are you sure it's 5 out of 12?
I think you need to up your ranking.
Wait, is it 5 or is it 4?
I think it's 5 because remember
it was 4.
I was a third of the way through, or is it 4? I don't know.
It's 4.
Oh, dang
it's
it.
It's 4. It's 4.
Okay, so I'm like a fourth of the way through.
Yes. Almost there.
I'm getting there. Getting
so are there. You just going to like tank out on us like in July? And then we'll never see you again for 2 more years?
No. I Brian's just like, yes,
that's
nodding.
That's the plan. That's the plan.
Yeah. Yeah, go out on top, burn
right.
it all out.
That's right.
So not only that, not only is it episode 4 of Cooney's Adventures on the Carolyn and Joe Show, but it's also the first time Brian and Cooney have been on the same episode at the same time. Is that true?
No, we were together. No?
No.
Oh, crap. It's crazy.
He's like, no. No. No.
I'll remember something like that.
Yeah.
That's right.
Cooney and I are enjoying classic Coca-Cola in the vintage bottle.
Yes, it's delicious.
It tastes so much better drinking it from the glass. It's curvature.
It's also only 8 ounces as opposed to what you can get from a plastic bottle, which is 20 ounces.
That's better for you,
historic.
Cooney.
Historic.
I think it is, right?
You know what's crazy, though? Somebody on Facebook posted this, and I saw it. It's basically like this little kid's like science report. And it says, like, how much sugar is in each drink.
Mm-hmm.
So for the presentation, it starts with water and goes all the way to a big gulp.
Mm-hmm.
So it has, like, this whole...
Wait, hold that thought.
The news. This is our news music. You guys, we're going to be at Asbury Park Comic Con on March 30th. It's going to be awesome. We're going to be on the beach. We're going to be on the boardwalk. We're going to be in New Jersey invading your shore. So come see Joe and I.
You know who else is going to be there? The producer of the Batman trilogy.
Michael Uslan.
He's going to be there. That's massive.
Yes, that is massive. And also other great artists are going to be there, including Bob Camp, the co-creator of Ren and Stimpy.
Brrr?
Yeah.
Who did that? I'm assuming that was Cooney that did that.
No, it wasn't me at all.
It was a mysterious... person.
Scooby-Doo just busted in.
So a whole bunch of awesome people are going to be there, including Joe and I, and you should go too. Asbury Park Comic Con, it's one of the funnest conventions, and I love that it's just like right near the beach. It's at the convention center this time around, so we're going to be like right up on the boardwalk. It's going to be amazing, and I'm excited about that. And then in April 20th and 21st, is Awesome Con in DC at the DC Convention Center. We're gonna be there. Cooney might be
paying people 20 cents so he can give them hugs.
Yeah. Or autographs.
Or autographs.
Yeah.
And pictures.
Yeah.
Everything. You're doing pictures too?
I mean, they have to provide the camera.
Oh, okay. But I was gonna be like, wow, that's with a lot, him.
What about kisses on the cheek?
Do I have to get the kisses on the cheek?
What about straight makeout sex?
We'll have like little booth behind the scenes.
It's going to get so carried away.
Around there, and you can have your 60 seconds in heaven with Cooney or whatever they call it.
I really want to see, like, you know, the autograph table lineup, and then at the end there's Cooney. You know, there's that. I want to see that.
No last name. I want my sign to be made out of crayons and cardboard.
It will be.
Yeah.
We'll definitely have that provided.
And it's glued on with my tears.
That's an adhesive now?
Sure, why not?
What else we got, Carolyn?
We have a whole bunch of tour dates coming up. You can check the rest of the schedule at curls-studio.com.
Are we allowed to do anything with the Magic Bullet that you're announcing?
Bullet, I did announce yesterday all of the contributors who got into Magic Bullet issue 6. I also revealed the cover art, which is by Art Hondros, and the masthead art, which is by El Jefe Design. It's looking really awesome. I've been getting awesome reaction. It's only been posted for the past few hours, and it's pretty awesome that so much feedback has come up, and very positively. Let's see. I do not know when I'm going to pick up the copies from the printer, but there are 5,000 newspapers coming our way.
So I don't
have any dates on when the official release date, when it hits the streets, is going to be.
But it's happening. But it's happening.
I do know for sure on May 4th, the first Saturday in May every year is Free Comic Book Day, and we have arranged 9 locations where people are going to be at that you can pick up Magic Bullet from. Possibly even get it autographed, meet all the contributors that are going to appear that day. We have all that information online as well. So I'll be making more announcements as we find out more information about distribution and how you can find your free copy. And we'll also be doing digital edition available for probably 99 cents that you can download.
That's but 1 cent less than a dollar. That's a deal.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yay, digital.
But otherwise, you can even find it for free physically as a newspaper in your hands if you go to one of our locations that we have it at. It'll be awesome. It's the most grandest issue ever, I think. We have a lot going on.
Nice.
I just had like a little Coke come up my throat as I'm talking.
Oh, you guys heard my burp earlier.
Mine was a very small one, but yeah, it's kind of difficult to burp and talk at the same time.
It is. It's very difficult.
Bulk. So yeah, Magic Bullet 6, look for it soon. Coming to a place near you. We'll have it at a lot of comic book shops, a lot of theaters, a lot of restaurants, maybe even some tattoo parlors. You'll see it around town. Magic Bullet. Number 6.
So, if you guys have been online anywhere, you might have noticed that Carolyn Carolyn and Joe, were on another podcast, the MoCast podcast, in which we talked about Sam Raimi. And in the background, Brian Sarvis was there, and he was just dying. He was just dying to say Brian. Something. He was just dying to say something. You know, what happened, but the opportunity was there. But
why were you like bottled up?
They didn't have enough mics to get me on, so I was just kind of sitting in the background, listening to the whole podcast, but I couldn't say anything. I couldn't chime in.
It was a great
you
podcast.
You did chime
to
in
on.
A couple times.
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't resist.
Couldn't hold back.
So now all of us, and another first, we all saw a movie together, which is random, but it was the movie Oz. I mean, we've had many episodes talking about our fear about what's going to happen with this movie, and now the moment has come. We watched it.
Yeah,
we watched it all together.
Brian should. Say something, a couple of words,
I want to start it up too. We'll go first of all.
He should say what he wanted to
say.
Yeah,
I want
to
say what you want to say.
Hold on, I can't say it because it's out of context.
Do I have to preface it with a question or
no? It's just out of context. It was in the moment. There was a moment there. When the moment comes with this conversation, I'll be able to chime in.
Will there ever come a moment where we have to start talking about what you want to talk about or? I feel we should just reference it right away.
Well, the subject at hand was Sam Raimi, right? I mean, we went around the circle talking about what was our favorite Sam Raimi moment. Why is he so great? Why do people not like him at all? And stuff like that. And you know, it was a great conversation to be had. But of course, one of the people that really motivated me to even get more into Sam Raimi was Brian Sarvis here, who put more details and like, what, you remember Army of Darkness? I was like, oh my god, there's another person that saw that.
Yeah, on the drive home. Brian was just like, this other guy said this, but this was really the proper answer. he was like, I knew all about it. And then, like, I felt bad because, like, the whole time I could just, like, imagine your pain of just being like, and you're not being able to say anything. And then I felt like I was a waste of a microphone because I was like, Brian knows so much more about Sam Raimi than I do.
So Brian, what was the first time you ever saw a Sam Raimi movie?
Well, the first one I ever saw was Evil Dead 1, and I was still in high school. A friend, or actually Jessica's older sister, turned me on to it because she was big into like B-horror movies and cult movies and all kinds of stuff I'd never heard of. So she kind of turned me on to it. And then I kind of just from there, I got hooked.
Do you think that's one? Is that your top five? Is Sam Raimi in your top five?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And you're talking about both you had news, both you and Cooney already had news about stuff I didn't know about what's happening with the Evil Dead series and what's going on with that.
Okay, well, I mean, we're going to talk more about Oz, but I'd like to get out of the way. recently, South by Southwest has been going on.
This week, right?
Yeah, this week until the 17th. I don't know when this is going to air, so it might have already...
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, okay. All right. Anyways.
No, it's going on as we speak.
Okay, cool. It's going on as we speak. They just premiered the new Evil Dead remake. And apparently, one of the main producers of that movie is Bruce Campbell.
Right.
And
see, I was wrong on the podcast. We were actually saying that Sam Raimi produced that, but he didn't produce that, right?
I think he might have had some input.
No, yeah, he's a producer on it too.
Just a real solid,
but not as hands on as Bruce Campbell was.
No, but yeah, as far as the credits go, he's a producer.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
what does that mean?
That was in quotation.
When you have creator rights, I mean, you're
right. Exactly.
But the cool thing about it is that apparently they're writing two other movies, so it's going to be a trilogy of Evil Deads, and also at the same time. Sam Raimi made sure that none of the plot points overlapped with the Army of Darkness series that he's been doing. So
there's going to be an Army of Darkness series too.
There's also going to be him and Ivan are writing a Evil Dead 4, but they said you might as well just reference it as Army of Darkness 2.
Right.
So I think Evil Dead's still Evil Dead, but I think now Ash is going to move on to more like fantasy and a creature-based series rather than a straight-up horror comedy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
What do you think about that, Brian?
Well, I don't know. I don't know where they're going to take it for Army of Darkness 2, but I definitely think in Army of Darkness, it's like when Ash became the superhero, like, you know, the epitome of a superhero. He had the whole comedy very... confident and had his little taglines like Hail to the King Baby and all that kind of stuff which was hilarious. So I'd like to see that character venture on and with his boomstick and kick some ass.
He was pretty similar to what's his name, Autolycus. Like, there's a lot of similarities in that with the King of Thieves from Hercules.
Well, and also if you think about it, the tone seems like it's getting very different from each other now. The remake looks like a really pitch black kind of thing, and I mean, like, I feel like Ash as a character has just been progressively getting not cartoony, but
kind of
a little bit more
straight up cartoony in Evil Dead 2, I believe.
I mean, he's become a comic character essentially, right?
He is a comic book character.
Yeah. Oh, he is, isn't he?
Yeah, he technically is now.
All right.
So when we all saw, we'll just go through one of the experience of first going to see Oz.
Yeah.
One of the first things that, you know, this happened the very first time ever, is that when I put on the 3D glasses, it didn't work. I remember that, like, when I first put them on, because, you know, the screen tells you, now put on your 3D glasses. You put them on, and the first thing I noticed was everything's purple and green. And I was like, and double. And I was like, this is fucked up. And then the next thing I saw was a guy in front of us just get up and leave. I was like, someone must be pissed, dude. So,
Well, first of all, we saw it on the Thursday, which I didn't even know we could have seen it, because I guess Joe and Cooney bought tickets earlier that day. I didn't even know, like I said, I thought it was like a midnight showing or something, but we saw it like Thursday at 9 p.m., so it's a whole day before it even releases, and so like at that point I was like, oh cool, I'm down with this, and then I didn't know how many people were even going to be in the theater, but seriously, there was just like us four, that one guy in the front, and I think there's like two people behind us.
Yeah. At that moment, I was like, man, no one cares about this movie.
Yeah, I know, because it was like such a weird thing. I was like, so does no one know that it came out today? Or like...
Or they had a sneak preview.
That they didn't really promote? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if it was like a sneak preview that they didn't promote, or like the town was like a ghost town or what, but it's like...
It is the ghost mall.
Yeah, a little bit of both, I think.
Yeah. But well, I like that theater. But I guess what I'm getting at is that, like, I was like, okay, so, like, is no one going to see this movie? Like, that's, like, an original thought. But then I went back and reverted, and I was like, well, maybe people didn't know that it was out today.
But, you know what's really funny about it? Like, I was reading Box Office Mojo, I guess. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Like, the first day... It did okay. Did like 20 million, so it was like, okay, that's a good start. Solid. But then on Saturday it jumped up and it made $35 million.
Nice.
And I'm like, holy crap! It's that's, weird
that
to
means,
see.
That means word of mouth.
Yeah. Brought it in. Well, people are
people like us.
Also, it's Saturday. I feel like people are more lenient with their schedules.
Yeah, but I think it's what's really funny is that I think it's people are like when they saw the trailers and. They've been advertising for such a long time. I think people are kind of over it before they go see it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see it, I think they're having a really fun time.
Yeah.
So.
And also, last I checked, the box office, like midday Sunday, they said that Oz was the third largest March opening ever.
Really?
That was good for them. That was midday Sunday, so I don't know if they beat that.
Well, unlike Alice in Wonderland, I think Alice in Wonderland just shot straight ahead into like a lot of money, and I feel like Oz is like getting there. It's getting more and more and more, like the momentum has started building, so
mm-hmm.
I feel like I hope that they keep at it, because it's a good little film.
It's a good film.
Yeah, like all of us really enjoyed it, but it was really strange, like, to get the 3D goggles at first and be like, what is this?
I was speaking out loud. What is going on? What is happening?
But they did end up fixing it for us.
Was it because the stereography was not misaligned, or was it they just didn't even turn on the filter?
All I know is
to make it 3D.
All I know is when I went out of the theater and went to like the cash register to tell people like, oh, there's first I was like, I think there's something wrong with my glasses because everything, the screen's messed up, it's like two color. And then he gave me another. He's like, try these ones. I was like, are these actually different? No. He's like, no, they're all the same. And then he told the guy, another guy who was like, a nicer dressed gentleman.
So clearly the
manager. Yeah. Then he turned to him and he's like, maybe one of us should go to the projector and check on that. And then he ran.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Right.
Well, when we walked in, nobody even checked our tickets. We just walked right in. Nobody said anything.
He's like,
we could have just paid for a ticket.
The guy was like, you guys got tickets? And I was like, yeah.
And then
Brian straight up asks, it's like, hey, can we get some glasses? And then it's like,
oh yeah, we had to basically ask to be served everything.
I know.
Even the 3D.
I know, but
projection.
Like, they didn't even check our ticket stubs. They just gave us the glasses.
Yeah,
and
we
I'm
just
like,
walked in. All
what?
Right.
Really? Okay. Well, good for you.
It'd be funny if we actually tried that again.
But didn't buy tickets.
Yeah, like, exactly. And just be like, do you have 3D glasses? We're just here to see the movie.
Because it's not like the guy, like the depressed kid that served me the first tickets, like Gate was there. I was gonna be
his
friend.
He already ripped up the tickets.
Yeah, he already ripped it up. So I was like, well,
what? Really?
Who's gonna believe that anyway?
Yeah, I don't understand that, because like Joe handed the tickets to me. He's like, here's the tickets, and they're already like ripped, like as if we already went in the theater.
Yeah, I don't.
But it still had like the proper time.
Yeah, I know. But it's just like, I think the kid was so on autopilot that he just ripped it out regardless.
Right. He's like, okay.
But he was the type of... Remember, I was describing him as... He was the type of depressed, hating life to the point where I couldn't understand what he was saying. He was like...
He was really sad.
You want 2D or 3D?
Okay. We're just laughing.
What did he say, Mark? He had the Jim Carrey Dumb and Dumber haircut.
Like, I wish I saw this kid. I want to see this kid.
Oh my god. What if he's hearing the podcast right now and then now he's like,
thanks for being...
He's like, that's me!
That's me!
He's famous. What should we call him? Spencer?
Spencer
Fryer?
No, he should have a girl's name.
Audrey? Audrey? Audrey?
What's up, Audrey?
Good old Audrey.
Thanks for listening.
Best ticket ripper ever.
I was like, you know who you are.
That would be
it's like
so
when they do
awesome
those commercials. They do those commercials and they're for obesity or like news, and they show the pictures of the fat people walking down the street.
Even though they don't show
their face, but they're like, you know who you are. You know that. You know that's you. When you see, you're like, damn, that's me.
They're like, those are my jeans. They always show like a close up of the hip going down of the fat walking.
The muffin top rolling over.
The walking fat.
All right, let's get into the spoilers before we start degrading the rest of humanity.
Fatty, fatty, fatty.
All right, so let's just go ahead. Let's just spoil the movie.
Yeah.
Going into it.
Yeah.
First thing I noticed was, damn, those opening credits were 3D freaking amazing. Ready, man.
Amazing.
I loved it. It was a visual spectacle.
It's, you know, Sam Raimi uses 3D in a very gimmicky, funhouse way.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm okay with it because I feel like 3D is kind of meant to be like so
over
in your
top.
Face. Yeah, I kind of want that. I think the whole Avatar thing was cool that it created 3D in three-dimensional space, but you know what? Sometimes I just want, like, knives and ropes and angry, hungry tree people coming at me, you know?
Well, the good thing about Sam Raimi's style is he already did that before 3D was even, you know what I mean? Before
he was already 3D before
there was 3D.
He was already doing that kind of, like, camera motions, jab at the camera, you know, that kind of stuff, so it worked out perfectly.
Oh, I want to ask Brian, it's like, you and I kind of talked about it after we got out of the theater, but remember that one moment when you knew it was going to be truly a Sam Raimi movie?
I remember
Oz.
When the fence came through, the thing.
That was
my balloon. I remember laughing at that moment because I was like, oh my God, it's on, dude. Yeah. Sam Raimi is on.
And also the rope and the little pulley turned into a snake character.
You're talking about when he's like, Oz's balloon's in the tornado and everything's flying at him.
Yeah,
all like five pieces of wood came at him. It's like, dun, dun, dun. I was like, oh crap.
But like you're following the piece of wood fly.
And then seriously, the rope and the little pulley became like a snake character and almost got him. I'm like, what? Really? Is this what's going to happen for the rest of the movie? And it did.
It was, man.
Ah, it's so insane.
I loved like the whole buildup even before the tornado came in, like the carnival atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And just like all of those characters too.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Like even like that Brutus type guy that was like after him for the girl.
Uh huh.
He was like barely on camera, only maybe like less than 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And you could totally read his full character.
And that's actually what I love. That's what's amazing about Sam Raimi. He's able to establish a full character with just one line. Like, you're able to, like, Bruce Campbell had a small cameo, but you remember his cameo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, that's what's great about his people. Like, every character he makes, they were very rememberable.
I do have to say this. I don't know if anybody else felt it, but I was feeling it while I was watching the movie. And especially in the beginning with James Franco's character, it reminded me of a very Ash-like character to me. Like, his very tongue-in-cheek, his little, his little gestures towards the women, his little, like, funky
slightly,
comic
slightly
smiling.
Misogynistic.
Very
slightly misogynistic.
It was there.
Well,
was
at
there.
Least he's not like straight up like ragging on women left and right. I mean,
yeah, but it wasn't full blown, but I definitely
full-blown
felt
AIDS.
It, you know?
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I would say the cool thing about, you know, Sam Raimi is that no matter how much violence and pain he might inflict on his characters, I would say he's kind of a traditionalist. He's kind of hokey, but he does it all in good fun.
Oh, yeah.
He never does anything out of, like, pure malice, I think.
That's what I enjoy about him. It is pure fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Except
for A Simple Plan. That was dark. That was a dark movie. What is wrong with you, man?
You know what's even a darker movie? It's darker Sam Raimi movie than that is that baseball movie that the Field of Dreams.
Kevin Costner?
Yeah, Kevin Costner.
Well, let's not even talk about that movie. That was that's just like him picking up a paycheck.
Yeah.
But see, this is what I liked about also James Franco's character is, or even characters that Sam Raimi creates. He's able to make sort of like not pathetic, but sort of like almost I guess like that down and out guy.
He's scrappy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like he doesn't want to quit, but he keeps on just losing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's cool that they made Oz into, you know, a bit of a con man. If he was just an inventor who suddenly landed on Oz, it would not have been as interesting.
Right.
Like you need that conflict of morality.
Well, I think it went with, I mean, even though in the very original one, you didn't see much of Oz, but at the end, they were like, oh, you're just a hoax. This is just a big hoax. You know what I mean? So you already had that in the original. That he was kind of a con man, you know what I mean? That feel. Because you're like, oh, this is all a lie. This is all just a show, you know? So I think he fit in well with keeping it to the original idea.
Well said.
But I would say, you know, I know you and I were talking about this too, Brian, but Mila Kunis as the The Wicked Witch, man. I don't know how I felt about that. Yeah, I was kind of, well, I was very conflicted.
Let's go ahead and talk about the cast. Would you all, I mean, Karen, what'd you think about the cast when you heard it beforehand?
Well, first of all, I'm a huge James Franco fan because I love Freaks and Geeks. Like, ever since the beginning of time, I was pretty much like...
Not Harry Osborn?
No, I love... because that was after the beginning of time. The BC of FG. Like, Freaks
BFG?
And Geeks.
BFG?
The BFG. I was, like, already there. I was already there. James Franco, like, at the, like... the trailer of, or not, like when I first saw the Oz trailer, I was like, holy shit, this is like Freaks and Geeks full circle. Like, knowing that he made it this far.
Well, it's like a lot of the cast was straight up from television. Mila Kunis, 70s Show, Dawson's Creek, Michelle Williams, Freaks and Geeks. Who else was Zach Braff
and Scrubs.
All holy of them. Crap.
See, I think Zach Braff did a great job of playing, like, the, if you want to say it, the comic relief character.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, yeah, people were like ragging on him for him, like, what?
I
really
thought he did a great job. He didn't bother
not,
me
I wasn't
at all.
People that ragged on him were people that didn't see the film.
Yeah
I mean, like, let's be honest.
I feel like
they just want to hate.
I feel like now after Star Wars with Jar Jar Binks, everyone's kind of like on the walking the line when they throw a comic relief character in there, because feel like, let not this be, I don't want this to be another Jar Jar Binks
situation.
If you're
gonna make a comic relief character, he or she needs to match or exceed the main hero's intelligence, I think.
I agree.
You just have a retarded lizard, retarded and obviously racial stereotype lizard running around.
Lizard?
What is he? Is he a
donkey lizard?
He's a Gagonquin or whatever the fuck they call him.
Gangan?
Gangan something.
I actually kind
Gangan
of like
style?
Him.
Gangan style lizard.
Gungan style? Well, I don't know.
He was a Gungan. That's what he was.
Gungan.
Are you serious? Is that what it was?
He was a Gungan.
Yeah, that was their race.
Gungan. Oh my goodness. But just hearing about the cast, like, beforehand,
Donkey
I was like,
Gecko.
I was already like, man, this looks good. You know, like, there wasn't anybody that I was like, I don't know about that.
No, but really subversive humor. Really fun. The monkey has, like, it was kind of weird. He was kind of bordering on, like, the way he talked and the way he acted was a little bit too contemporary.
Right.
But you know what? The animation was great. The emotions kind of displayed on him was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know why we're not even talking about China Girl.
Oh, I mean,
we were going to get into it.
Oh my God, you got Carolyn. You got.
I think that China Girl.
You got
I think that China Girl, like, was. I'm not going to say she was the star of it because there were so many elements of the film, but I think that she was the breakout star of it. And I actually did some research on the actress. I can't remember her name right now. Joey King, yes.
Yeah.
And I started following her on Twitter. She is, like, so adorable. Like, I didn't know anything about her. Apparently, she's, like, 13.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually been in a lot of stuff. She was in The New Girl. Remember the episode of The New Girl where there was, like, a bratty kid that made a film about Jess?
She was
a
the bratty kid?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, totally.
Nice. See, because I was, like, on IMDb, I flipped through her pictures, and I was like, oh, my gosh. What else was she? She was in something else that I saw. And then I was like, oh, my gosh, this is her. So, like, we've all seen her before, probably. And, like, her voice acting as China Girl was so amazing. Like, and also just that character was so amazing. Because I guess what brings it all full circle, too, was in the beginning, they have the wheelchair girl, and she wants magic. James Franco's, like, doing all his magic, and she's like, oh, can you help me walk?
Because he's doing impossible things, so of course, like, a girl would be like, can you fix this?
Which
is impossible to do that.
She also played that part.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much, like, the same structure as Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, same structure.
To a certain degree, I mean, but it's, you know, it's well done, and it didn't feel too much like I was treading the same ground.
No.
There was enough new things and new elements kind of, you know, scattered about so that it felt like not just like a retelling, but something entirely
like a fresher.
Definitely.
But that was such a crucial moment of the story when they go, was that a town they went to? Like Chinatown?
The Chinatown. Yeah, Chinatown. It's literally called Chinatown.
And I thought it was
that
also
was awesome,
amazing.
By the way.
Like, I heard Brian say, like, when we got back to the house, he was like, man, I wasn't so sure about China Girl, you know, like a doll, you know, like that type of attitude. And then you were like, but I was totally sold on her at the end.
Well, at first I was just like, Because the first thing you see is like, oh, you knew it was displaying from his original life before he went into Oz.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's cool. And I thought it was just going to end, but it got really sappy really fast and heavy when her legs were broken. And he's like, oh, my family, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, this is getting really deep and too. And then all of a sudden,
like,
she
I can't handle it, man. Yeah.
And she just, the character just flips 180 and she's like pulling out knives and
shit. That was awesome. Was like, I got to protect myself. And I'm like, whoa.
Dude, that's what needed to happen, man. Yeah. That's a totally needed to happen.
And then I was like, yeah, this character's awesome.
And you know, for a fact, you can only do that, Sam, like, you can only find that in, like, a Sam Raimi character. You have to have sort of, like, they have a two-facedness of, like...
That was a big knife. That was a huge... That was not, like, a little tiny little thing that she was carrying around. No, it was a butcher knife-sized knife. It was crazy.
You got to think, though, like, there's... I feel like in all of Sam Raimi's characters, there's... He fills the screen with a lot of assholes. They're just like, get away from me, kid. I don't want to handle it. You know what I mean? That don't have the time for people, but then he gives them heart. And I think that's a cool thing.
Spunk. She's got spunk, which is... I thought, yeah, you're right. You think that originally she was going to be this... Since she's a porcelain girl, right. She's going to be like, very dainty.
You can't just leave me in the woods alone.
Yeah, and then she becomes more and more outgoing as the story goes along.
Yeah, I thought she was going to be the emotional draw character. Whenever things get sappy, she's one like, oh.
Or
you
like
know.
The doll from the Island of Misfit Toys, how she's all like, oh, pity me.
Yeah.
But this one's got, she's got a little sass to her.
Yeah.
Good for you.
It was good.
Good for you, Rainy.
But I actually think that, so yesterday I posed a question of who do you think would play Dorothy if they were to remake a modern day Wizard of Oz? Like let's just say if Sam Raimi was to cast a Dorothy, like, who would she be?
Oh, you know what's really... Oh, by the way...
I actually want to hear Cooney's answer for this.
Actually, he's gonna say
Zoe.
But she was already an awful,
yeah,
awful.
She was already in the awful.
I want to see the girl who played Hit Girl do it.
Oh, that's
Chloe.
She's an awesome actress,
man. She's
really good.
I kind of wish that she... It's kind of weird because sometimes she can play straight really well, but she's given these like really incredibly cutesy parts, and I'm kind of getting tired of it. Like even in Hugo, she was like bordering on the manic pixie girl kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I want to see her in Carrie. Have you seen trailer for that?
Yeah.
Oh, that looks kind of cool.
Yeah. It looks like it'll be good.
Julianne Moore plays her crazy mom.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of exciting. I forgot to mention this. Remember Michelle Williams, who was Oz's ex-girlfriend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She said she's going to marry a guy named Gale.
Yes.
Isn't like...
Which is Uncle Henry.
Yeah. Isn't it like...
Henry Gale, right?
Yeah. Gale.
That's Uncle Henry, so that means that she's Aunt Em.
That's what I thought.
Isn't that weird?
That's what I thought. That's perfect. That's what
I
thought.
I didn't even catch up on that until like I was like, holy crap.
Tie it together, right?
When did you catch up on it? Like when you got home or something?
Yeah. Like I was like, Gale. Like, oh,
they're saying,
what?
Gale. Like when she first said, she's like,
really?
Really?
When they first said Gale, that's when I was like, okay, I get where this is going now.
Right.
And a lot of people are going to miss that because like people... think they know Oz, well, they really don't. But Carolyn knows Oz, knows the whole world.
And I forgot many details about the first movie. I mean, which I guess is it more? I think it's based more on the movie.
Did you guys
rather than the actual books?
Yeah, they altered it a little. But the thing is like now this has inspired me. I don't know if I'm actually gonna have time to do it. Hopefully, maybe. This has inspired me to actually like want to read all of the books because there's like several. Dozen books. I don't know how many, but there's a lot.
And you have the Return to Oz movie and book, which is fantastic, by the way. It's so dark.
That movie is super dark. I watched it like a couple months ago. It was on TV. I was like, man, because I hadn't seen it since I was younger.
Yeah.
It's super dark.
Creepy, wait,
which one was this?
You got those roller clown guys that are like,
which one is this?
Return to Oz.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have
Feruza Balk or whatever.
Against, what was the Ice-like King? I don't know what the Rock King. I can't remember. Ogre King? I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But it was like, they had a replacement Tin Man, but it's not really the Tin Man.
It's like the clock. He's the time.
Yeah. He's got a copper twirly mustache. It was so weird. Have you seen it?
No, actually.
Oh, you gotta watch it. It's so good.
And speaking of King, I actually think that Joey King should be the new Dorothy in a few years.
Huh. I can see that happening. Although that'll be kind of confusing because you have China Girl too.
Yeah, but if they, I don't know what their intentions is with China Girl, but it would be pretty cool if she did. Whoa. She could totally fit into playing Dorothy though, because I feel like a lot of people say like Zooey Deschanel because just because of the haircut. But mm-hmm. if you look beyond it, I don't think she has like the innocence needed to play Dorothy.
It's a tough role. It really needs to go to like probably someone we don't know.
A newcomer?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Like the cool thing about, you know, for the most part, I mean, they got notable actors to play characters in a role in Return of Oz, but it wasn't their star power wasn't so huge that it clouded myself from like right. if Brad Pitt had played Oz, all I can think is, oh, that's Brad Pitt.
And that was supposed to go at first. It was supposed to be Robert Downey. They wanted Robert Downey.
No,
for that.
No, you need somebody way younger. Like James Franco is at the right age. Yeah. If you had casted Robert Downey Jr., he would have been too old. He would have already been like a couple years away from just being the Oz. Right.
And also, he's already Sherlock Holmes. He's already Iron Man.
Yeah, he's all these other characters.
Yeah, yeah.
James Franco isn't anything. Cause, I mean,
what?
No, I mean, excuse as in, me? He's not already established.
He's nothing.
As like he's 127 hours. But you mean he's not like...
He's not part of a franchise.
Yeah, exactly. I guess he's Harry Osborn.
He's Harry Osborn, but not a starring
role. I may not personally like him, but he has... He's kind of smart in a way. He's always kind of changing things up, and I don't like his philosophy in a way he like kind of plays off his career as though it's just one giant joke or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he,
yeah,
you know what I mean. He like one giant performance art kind of thing.
Yeah,
like that's what he's saying.
You know what I didn't really get with James Franco, to be honest with you. Like I stood up for him. Like I know what. Okay, for was it 2 years ago he got on Twitter. I was like, oh cool, he's on Twitter. He's like doing social media and stuff. And then, like, I think he was doing it in the weeks leading up to promote the Oscars. That year that he hosted it. And probably some guy behind the scenes is like, hey, we need you to be more active on social media. You know, like, I don't feel like that wasn't his, like, choice in a way. I mean, so basically, like, I feel like, actually, looking back, I supported him during the Oscars because so many people were like, he sucks, look at this stoner, he's just hosting the Oscars and stuff like that. But I was like, oh, I'll still support him. But looking back on it now, there was like a couple odd moments, and then he just like got off Twitter like that following week.
Good for him.
Like he was just like he probably was just like, I don't need this.
He does, but I'm sure just his PR person, like you said, just being like, hey, we need to represent this more. You need to get on there. I mean, what do you guys do it for? Do you really love Facebook, but you do it for promotion, right?
Oh yeah, certainly. I do like actually Twitter sometimes, but for Facebook, I certainly do it for promotion. Right.
Facebook sucks balls, but you do it because you want to promote yourself. So sometimes you have to do that.
Social networking is hard. It's like it's okay. It's easy to start, but it's like hard to maintain.
Right.
Like an active presence.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you will get people to notice you, unfortunately.
And you have to constantly be updating.
Oh yeah. It's flooded, man.
Like from what I've read, even with webcomics, if you don't update your webcomic on the consistent schedule, you lose your audience immediately.
Yeah, because we have an attention span of gnats. We really do. I'm not kidding.
Basically.
Like I'm just like, oh, I ran out of Coke. I wonder if there's any more Coke in the fridge right now.
And then you're like, what's in my hand? Oh, there's a Coke in my hand. It's empty. Okay. You're like, so you had a so then we come to Mila Kunis' character. So she technically plays two characters, right?
Yeah, she plays Theodora, the good witch,
right?
Who's like really hot, and she's wearing like a really tight. Leather pants.
Black leather pants.
I'm like, whoa, why are you wearing
Did you
like,
see
really
that one shot
pants?
That they had of like her ass?
I'm like
it wasn't hard. Yeah. It wasn't like hardcore, but it was like you could tell that she was like turned and it was like, you know, up her ass.
The camera took that camera straight up the ass.
It also didn't help that
it was like, look at my ass. It was pretty much like a shot that was look at my ass.
It also didn't help that her pant leather material was shiny. It was almost like PVC. Yeah. So it's like you can see every contour of her like butt and legs, and I'm like, I mean, I'm totally fine with that.
I was like, I thought you'd be like, that's disgusting.
I'm okay with
that's
that.
That's not for kids.
I'm okay with that, but it is a PG movie, so I'm like, you know?
The kids don't know that. Kids don't look at that stuff. They just are like, oh, look, she's wearing
except
black
for
pants.
That one 12-year-old boy.
Maybe
just
him.
Just hit puberty. He's like, oh, yeah.
He's like, I love this movie. Oh.
Is that what happens?
Who?
Theodora.
Because remember, like, with Sesame Street and Katy Perry... Or
Katy Perry.
People were Katy Perry, and people were like talking.
Katy Perry. Gah, 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 gah.
People were talking about her cleavage, but like honestly, if you're watching Sesame Street and are like a little kid, you're not gonna notice that.
Yeah, you were just done looking at boobs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're just like, I just sucked on that.
You might be like, I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Why am I so thirsty?
I don't know what her milk tastes like.
I want milk.
There's that one kid in the theater, and he's 11 years old, and he sees Mila Kunis' ass, and that, you know, that little boy, he grows out to be Audrey.
He's like, I'm here for that.
What you guys think of, like, I mean, this movie did have a lot of CGI. I mean, it was, I don't know how much it was, but I feel like it was like probably 75% all CGI. What do you think in comparison, at least to like the like Oz and anything else?
Well, like,
not Oz, but I mean, but Alice like Wonderland? Alice in Wonderland, yeah.
You mean Alice in Shitland? Shitty in Shitland?
That was in 3D too, right?
Fucking yes. Piece of crap land.
God, that was such horrible.
So bad.
It was bad. I don't know how it made so much money.
Because I like that there was
Johnny Depp breakdance at the end.
I mean, this is one thing that was missing.
I want to learn how to do that dance.
It was awesome because I felt like in Oz, what was there was that you had these wide graphic shots, like these graphic element shots that were purely all CGI, but they're like real composed elements. But I thought that was missing in in Alice in Wonderland. You just had psychedelic colors.
Alice in Wonderland was like, let's just throw a bunch of CGI in a big ball of crap,
but also they didn't. In there. But also, it didn't even feel like they interacted with it. Yeah, but no, in this they feel like they interacted with it.
Well, if you look at the production stills, it's kind of weird. I'm getting all nerdy now, but the production stills for Alice in Wonderland, it's like there are scenes where Alice is like walking down steps. It is nothing but blue screen with blue screen steps. At least with in the context of Oz, they had stand-in puppets for China Girl and the monkey. Right. They even have Zach Braff puppeteer the monkey himself so he would interact with James Franco. Yellow Brick Road was real.
Right.
And things that they had direct contact with in terms of like environment, like was real too.
Real practical elements.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think you have to do that if you want to get good performances out of your actors.
Yeah.
Bottom line. If you just throw them in front of a bunch of blue screen and be like, act. I mean, what the fuck am I acting with?
I'll act,
but I mean, this is going to be like, I am Mannequin Skywalker. I ruined the Star Wars trilogy.
Did you say Mannequin Skywalker? Yes.
Mannequin.
But, CGI elements, you know what's really cool about the CGI in Oz? They knew that there's no way you can do this. They purposely just not made it look real.
Right.
It had a very painterly quality to it.
I mean, Oz ain't real anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a fantasy world, so I'm okay with that.
You know what was awesome? The horse of many colors in the background.
That's a good look.
Nothing was like in your face in terms of references. They were nice enough to kind
actually
of keep it.
And there was like a part where the horse carriage was coming to Oz, and it was like a white horse. And then in my head, I was like, why is this a white horse? Why are they not using the horse of many colors?
Yeah, and it just kind of like chilling out.
But then they were just in the background chilling out. But I was like, I was okay with. I'm good with that too because it was like a little hidden gem.
See, now they can do the horse many colors of CGI. In the original one, they just did lighting changes for each step of the way as the horse walked through.
Yeah.
Just kind of.
You know what I love too in the original Oz when they basically get groomed up.
Oh yeah.
I was like, okay. But in this movie, they all already looked beautiful, so there's like no grooming needed.
You know what's also weird? This is kind of a little bit off topic, but it's weird how like at the end. It kind of got Hugo on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's because it became about the love of practicality, love of practical effects, and magic.
That's true.
Because it was all about like just a zoetrope projection.
Right.
I thought it was really cool.
I mean, I like that aspect of it. Because that really, what it is.
You know what's funny though? It's like I should have seen it coming a mile away, but for some reason I was so invested in the movie at that point. I wasn't sure what he was going to do to beat the witches, even though I should have known.
Yeah, you knew that was the shtick. That was his ultimate shtick.
I should have known when it came. I was like, oh, yeah.
That's the genius, because like that's one thing that really was really great about this movie was it really was sort of unpredictable, because you didn't, all of a sudden you're like turning and there's a monster.
As predictable as it should have been, it wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like he still kept it fresh and you're still like surprised when things happen.
At the point where he was like taking the gold coins and like about to take off in the balloon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Were you like, oh man, he's leaving them.
He was like, no, he's ditching them, man, I know it.
No, but what I reconnected that with is I remember in the original Oz, when she goes back, he's like, I made this extra balloon Because remember, she rides back in the balloon in the original one. He had, like, Oz had an extra one, remember? For, mm-hmm. Didn't he? For, am I losing my mind?
But they, but then Toto left the balloon, and then she got out of it.
Yeah, but I mean, they, yeah. But I connected that with, like, thinking about the original one. Like, oh, yeah, he did make an extra balloon because they were talking about it then. You know what I mean? So in my mind, I was like, well, he's not really going to leave because, well, obviously he was there, but there's also an extra balloon. That was made in the original one, and they kind of connected it with that.
This kind of goes back to, like, what I think is... I wouldn't say it's, like, a fantastic work of art film, but, like, a good...
But what really is?
A good movie, a good enjoyable movie for me is, like, Argo, you knew what was going to happen. You knew that everyone was going to be safe.
Yeah.
So, you knew the ending, but it kept a sense of suspense and excitement throughout it. So, I was still, like... at the edge of my seat, kind of hoping, like, oh man, maybe they're not gonna make it. So I felt the same thing with Oz when I was like, oh man, they're not gonna make it. Right. Oh man, like, Oz is really gonna leave them? Right. Holy crap. And it's like, oh no, that's bullshit. It's what am I even thinking that way?
Yeah. But when you live in the moment of the movie, you're stuck in there. The world was created.
It's the same thing too, because I was like, well, we know that neither witch is gonna die. Because in the original, they're both there. One gets the house dropped on, and then the Wicked Witch is still there for Dorothy to kill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you're like, you know there's a battle, but you know no one's going to die.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, we never talk about Rachel Weisz's...
I enjoyed her.
Yeah. I thought she rocked it. Unfortunately, she really overshadowed Mila Kunis, because that was my one downfall for this movie.
Rachel Weisz played that part.
Yeah, like she nailed it.
She played a wicked witch.
Yeah,
she played it well.
Yeah, she played it really well.
And it's kind of sad too, because it's like Mila Kunis' character should have been the centerpiece. She should have been, like, you know,
super wicked.
Yeah, she should have been the angel at the top of the tree. She should have been the centerpiece. But
because basically it's like Anakin turning into Vader type deal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's so, what you want to see is that transition period and how it happens. And I think Rachel Weisz was a way better witch.
What was it about Mila Kunis that you didn't like in that performance?
She's too sweet.
Yeah, it's something. She just didn't sell it for me, man.
And then was she not evil enough when she did become evil?
When she gets angry, I just don't buy it. I'm just like, nah.
She just sounds whiny.
She just sounds like, I don't know. Like, I never break the same character that I've always been. I almost put her in that.
You're like, this is just the same as forgetting Sarah Marshall Mila Kunis.
Right. I feel like she didn't step out of that normal Mila Kunis. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, what's her name? Kristen Stewart. She never steps out of Kristen Stewart. She's always Kristen Stewart. It's always the same reaction. High. Always same emotion. Just like, oh, yeah, I don't care. Hey.
Just high.
okay.
But also, I feel like they didn't give her enough of an arc to become evil.
Like, it was just like a simple bite of an apple, and then all of a sudden...
Yeah, like, she was too good. She was too good at the beginning. Right. Like, you never saw her cracks at the seam. You never saw enough of her
fallibility
as a character.
Right.
They did kind of hint, like, right before when she was like, oh, I have the music box, too.
I know, but it's...
And then you kind of seen her, like, get jealous. Like, to be like, he's my guy. Like, Oz is mine. You know, like, I already tried to hook up with him. You know, like, you could see that they had whatever, a spark or something beforehand.
But what's really fascinating about her character, too, is just, like, she gets seduced so easily because she never had any sort of male attention.
Yeah, that's right. She didn't
have
anybody.
Which is kind of weird. Which is, like, it's a weird little factoid and character study. I kind of want them to explore a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said there's possibly going to be another one if that's successful.
I know,
so.
I know.
When she first met him, it was like she'd never seen a guy
never
before.
Never seen a man.
Well, she was taking things way quick with him. Like, she only had been with him for less than a day, and she was already like, oh, well, we'll rule the kingdom together.
I know, which is a really interesting character trait. Like, why is she so clean?
Mm-hmm.
Why is she so, like, deprived from male attention? I mean, I understand that she's a witch, but it's like, Does being a witch like create a sense of persecution? I mean, this is for like a much deeper movie than this kids movie.
This could be
the deeper and powerful.
But it is something. It is an interesting like subtext that I wish that they would have explored a little bit more. So then, even though we didn't see her, we could have bought into her evil side a little bit more.
But see, I think if it was a different actress, we could have done it with exactly the same amount of screen time, the same amount of character build. I just don't think she sold enough for me. I like Mila Kunis, but I just don't think she fit the bill.
Clarity and performance. Rachel Weisz has a really, like, the way she delivers lines, the way she looks
and acts.
Even Michelle Williams is able to play it sort of that, just like,
sweet.
I guess that, yes, the ultra sweet, you know?
But it's ultra sweet, but in a really clear, crystal clear kind of way.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I feel like a lot of contemporary actors nowadays are not very giving in their performances.
Yeah.
And they don't have the clarity and the pinpoint accuracy to really hone in on a particular emotion and really project it out. I mean, I feel like even James Franco, to a certain degree, can't project, like, real, honest to God, earnestness.
Like a transformation, basically.
Yeah. Like, Zach Braff, I feel like, what's weird is Zach Braff, I think, sells comedy in a really clear way.
Mm-hmm.
And you can feel that clarity. Rachel Weisz, too, Michelle Williams, and to even Joey King, even, like, her voice acting really sold the clarity of acting. And unfortunately, Mila Kunis is just like, you know, she's very, I mean, she can be angry, she can be sad, but
you but can it's never, just literal angry
yeah
sad.
Yeah you can yeah. never
it's not
you,
this character
you can never feel the depth
yeah there
of
yeah,
that character yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing behind those eyes.
Something that was interesting that is that they always promoted on the trailer was the Wicked Witch spinning around in like this
like the Transformer,
and then she was like spinning around with her broom.
Yeah,
and it was like
in front of the fire where you just see a silhouette.
Yeah.
They did not actually use that shot in the movie. They did,
but they totally changed the sound mixing on it from the trailer.
I don't remember seeing the silhouette of the actual witch come across the fire.
I don't remember seeing that. I remember seeing the fire and hearing the sound effects. She came in, but she never did that, like
the spin,
whip around.
The camera was circling around it,
right?
And then she was like, you see her silhouette in the giant ball of fire.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that. Maybe I just missed it.
It was there, but it was like the sound mixing, the sound effects were totally different.
Yeah,
and I think that.
I'll have to go back and watch that again.
I'm not going to lie. Those are probably my favorite moments of that film was when the witch arrives. Like, I love the fact of seeing a fucking witch fly through the air in that scale. I thought that was pretty badass.
They did a really good job of the flying sequence.
That looked menacing. It would have been sick if they threw a little bit of the original theme.
The original witch theme.
Yeah, just a small hint. Not too much. Just a little homage to it, but like maybe in the future.
Surprisingly lacking in musical numbers, too, which is
no music.
Except for that one, but that was done very tongue-in-cheek, and Oz was like, no more singing.
I know, I kind of liked the fact that it wasn't a musical.
Well, because that could have been the one element that would have dated it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's tough with musicals at this point, because it does sort of set you in that time. Well, final word about Oz before we head out, guys.
Go see it.
Yeah, definitely. It's worth a viewing.
It is it's a little extra for the 3D, but I feel like it's worth it. It's one of those good experiences.
Yeah, let's see. Real quick, what's everyone's favorite moment of that movie, just so people can grab onto something? Mine was witches and stuff like that.
Dude, it's got to be China Girl pulling out the knife.
Oh, nice.
I don't know. I think I like the end scene where he actually created the Oz character.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one, too. Just, like when you
the reveal of it
the
was
explosions?
Awesome.
I like that moment, too.
I can't really pick one. There are just, like, so many great ones. I feel like I have to watch the movie, like, at least 5 more times to, like, at least determine, like, my favorite sequences.
The credit sequences are amazing.
Somebody's bank account is going to get low.
See, I'm still determining if I want to see it one more time in the theater, because then, like, then I can be, like, you know,
in 3D, too.
The 3D is so fun.
Exactly.
It's probably the best, funnest 3D I've seen.
Like, I don't want it to leave the theater, and then I'm going to regret it later on being like, oh, my God, I only saw it once. I know that sounds, like, really intense, but...
I think people need to experience the theater more. It's a lot more gratifying, a lot more immersive experience.
But I think when I see it, I might wait until after the rush of people.
Like a second run?
Right before it starts to leave the theater, I'll be okay. Because I don't want to deal with all the people.
Yeah. Just make sure you don't go to that theater anymore. I feel like it's...
Really?
You should go to one of the bigger ones.
At least you can go to that one. There's no distractions.
Yeah.
That's why I liked it.
Yeah.
So, thanks, guys, for being on the show. I thought it was pretty awesome to talk about Oz with you.
Yeah. Thank you.
It was bound to happen. Where can we find you, Cooney?
You can reach me at www.kunitarohi.com, kunitarohi.com. I have a website, so, okay, well, don't kill me.
What about you, Brian? Where can we find you?
You can't. I find you.
That's not true. We can find you on Instagram.
You can find me on Instagram, and you can possibly find me somewhere on astrayproductions.com.
That's right. Yeah. This show is brought to you by astrayproductions.com. Go check out my work at goastray.tumblr.com, where I update my newest shenanigans works. Got some films coming up. Let's see what happens. What about you, Carolyn?
I have a website. It's curls-studio.com. Check out my webcomic Curls and all the other fun stuff that we're up to.
Awesome. That was a great show. Thank you, guys, and catch you later, Carolyn.
We're off to see the wizard.